6 never, ever marks the spot.
I am altering the deed. Pray I don't alter it any further.
Most of the intelligence community doesn't believe he exists. The ones that do call him the Winter Soldier.
I'm Batman.
Dracarys.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of the Top 5 Report, the podcast that has officially reached 400 episodes. 7 years ago, Peter and I sat down and said, hey, we're going to do a podcast, and here we are 7 years later, hitting that milestone of 400. Yeah, there you go. My name is Drew. I'll be your host for the evening. As always, along with me is my brother Peter. How are you, sir?
I'm here in swivel mode.
He's referring to the chair he's sitting on. Peter, happy 400 episodes.
Woo, yeah, 400. Let's
Ooh,
go.
Yeah, that's all you got?
Yeah.
Sure. At 400, look, that means we've been sitting here, like, yes, there's been a week here or there that we've taken off. Ultimately, it's been very consistent, so that's 400 consecutive weeks, ultimately, aside from a random, hey, I'm sick and can't be on. We threw in a vacation here or there, but for the most part, we're looking at 400 consecutive weeks. That means 400 top five lists, which is crazy, which means that's the hardest part about the show, is figuring that out. I want to make a quick couple shout outs. First off, to our cousin Brian, who helped us figure out all the website nonsense and how the audio stuff functions on the internet, transferring it over to different types of files, the web storage, all that stuff. It was a huge difference trying to figure that all that stuff out and getting us up on the platforms like Apple Podcasts, iHeart Radio, and so on. I also want to give a huge shout out to our friend Ryan. I spoke with Ryan the other day to let him know, hey, we're hitting 400 episodes. Yeah. So him and I chatted a little bit, but Ryan did all of our audio stuff, all of our theme songs, our little bumper in the middle for the start of the top five list, all that stuff. So without you guys, that's a huge, huge, big thank you from both of us, because we wouldn't be, you know, where we are today without you guys. And a big thank you to all of our guests that we've had over the years, whether, you know, our friend of the show, Audrey, our friend Bryn, our brothers who have appeared on the show, our friend Adam. There's people I'm probably going to forget, so I'm going to stop naming names, but I do appreciate all you guys who have been on the show. That being said, we actually have an in-person show this week, which we don't normally do. So, Peter, I do appreciate you driving out here to do an in-person show for episode 400, yeah, which is awesome. We also have a guest on this week for 400. Peter and I brought on our younger brother, Sean. So of the four of us, Sean, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Yes. So by all means, hop in where you feel you need to hop in. Peter, do you have anything you want to add? How was your week? Anything like that? Do you want to say anything about the 400?
I have two quick questions, actually. Did you tell, when you talked to Ryan, our sound guy, the other week, did you talk to him about the Mandalorian and Grogu thing?
I talked to him very briefly about Mandalorian and Grogu, and he had the same kind of thoughts that we did in terms of that one.
Has he seen the movie?
Yeah, he did.
So for anybody who's, maybe this is your first episode or you didn't listen when we reviewed that movie, when they show up at, or when the Mandalorian shows up at Shikari in the movie, the music sounds very similar to our podcast, and we all know that Disney is listening to our show, so we think that Disney definitely ripped us off, you know, for that sequence of the movie. Regardless, the music was amazing at that part. Otherwise, you did forget to introduce our other guest we have on the show today. We have me, we have you, we have our brother Sean, and we have another guest.
Who's our other guest?
Right here.
Oh, yeah. And this is an audio show, so you can't see that there is a, I want to say, possibly 1999 vintage Jar Jar, looks like maybe an 8-inch action figure. right? Am I right about that? Yeah.
Sounds about right.
Yeah, for episode one, this is like one of those, it's a character you probably would have bought for a younger child just due from points of articulation and little like pieces, but hey, we have a Jar Jar Binks in the studio.
We're going to be talking about some nerdy action figure related stuff later on, so that's just why this Jar Jar Binks toy was making a guest, but mostly I'm just trying to throw Drew wrenches in the gears as we talk, and I just want to see how he reacts. So we don't always do an in-person episode, so
it might not
be fun for the listeners, but it's fun for me at least. So there you go.
Well, how about this? To get our actual 400 episode on the road, Peter, what did you watch this week?
I've been doing a really good job of not watching a lot. Excellent. Which is kind of cool. Yeah, it's just kind of cool. It's summertime. The weather's nice. So I have been enjoying just being busy and enjoying the outdoors. I've really only watched one thing this week, and I know the rest of everybody else on our show has watched it as well. The only thing I've really watched is Disclosure Day. So we can jump into that, but I don't know if either of you have anything you want to jump into first.
If you couldn't hear Peter's whisper, yes, Disclosure Day. actually, not to bury the lead, but the three of us went and saw Disclosure Day together, and I feel like you and I, for doing the show for 7 years, don't get to see movies together very often, and we need to do that more often, I
for
think,
sure, yeah.
Going forward. So, Sean, yes, we will talk about Disclosure Day. I have one thing, I think, that I can say that I've added on, and I'm probably going to save my review till next episode.
Okay.
Because I'd rather jump into Disclosure Day because I haven't finished what I'm talking about. So just to, I'm going to turn it over to Sean. Sean, you said you had a bunch of stuff you could watch. Due to length of the show, try not to give me like the crazy dichotomy of what you did since the last time you were on the show. But please, what have you been watching?
Well, let me just go through the litany. So, I'm just kidding. watched a few things. I finally started watching Vox Machina, and that was fantastic.
When you say started watching, what does that mean, started?
Well, I finally started, and this show has been going on more years than before I started.
Let me rephrase. Are we talking like I've watched two episodes and I love it and I can't wait to watch more, or like I've watched season one and I'm working through season two right now?
I'm all caught up, and I just started the new episodes that just launched on Amazon.
Yeah, I know. That's another thing I'm very behind on. I saw that they dropped the episodes, and I'm like, crap. Mm-hmm. So I have to get on the current season. And I actually am questioning if I saw the end of season three. I'm not going to lie, but I'm pretty sure I did. So
it's really good. I really like that show. I encourage it for anybody who is listening and likes something, especially that's like, you know, you pull from a fantasy game, any RPG. And then watching this show, I forgot that I was watching just a dramatized version of people's gameplay. And then there's a part where they're running down a street chasing a bad guy, and somebody messes up and hits their teammate, and they like yell at the person. I was like, oh, that was probably a roll five.
That was probably a dice roll. Yeah, that was probably a bad roll. Right.
I also, because one of the seasons...
You haven't watched Mighty Nein yet, have you?
I was just going to say, so one of the seasons ended, and it just plopped me right into starting Mighty Nein, and I didn't finish the first episode, but it looks really cool, and I'm very intrigued by it, but I haven't continued, but it looks really nice.
In my opinion, it's darker, and Marisha Ray from Critical Role, that's my favorite part of Critical Role, is the Mighty Nein arc, compared to Vox Machina, but... Marisha Ray in an interview said that Vox Machina is their Hobbit and Mighty Nein is their Lord of the Rings.
Interesting.
So if that gives you any kind of, you know, idea whatsoever, but yeah. So anyway, what else? What else you got?
I also have been watching the new season of Scrubs, and I finished that, and there's not enough episodes in that season.
No, not at all. Not at all. But that was a great... You haven't watched it yet, have you, Peter?
No.
Okay. That was... I really enjoyed... that because it was I felt like they didn't miss a step in terms of the gap from when they ended the show, from the original show ending to when they start now. They didn't miss a step. They fell right back into place.
Yeah. And it was a really successful way to do like a reunion feel and hit all the nostalgia, but also not make it hokey and like dumb and like, oh yeah, you're clearly doing this because of this. They actually like roll it into the storyline without skipping a beat, which is fantastic. And the last thing that I love And unfortunately, I just saw the last episode, but I've been telling you for a couple weeks now that Corner Gas is hilarious.
Yes.
There's nothing super exciting about it. There's nothing super impressive about it, but it is the most laid-back sitcom ever. It's up in a town in Saskatchewan, Canada, but it's just hilarious. It's like a late, super laid-back, clean version of Clerks, if you can catch my drift.
Sure. And I know you keep telling me to watch it, and every time and then it comes up in conversation, hey, are you guys watching this? No, but I will get to it, I promise, at some point. That's cool. So yes, before we get to Disclosure Day, two things. I watched a show called Not Suitable for Work. It's on Hulu or Disney Plus, depending on how that works. Oh, before I go any farther, actually, I'll wait. Anyway, so Hulu or Disney Plus, however you guys find it, we'll come back to that. I'll throw it in the news. I hate the title. The title is horrible. If you remember, there was a movie that came out in the late 2000s called That Awkward Moment. Mm-hmm. The movie was really good. The movie's actually a really solid, good rom-com. The title is horrible. It's clearly someone took a meme and said, we'll make that the title of the movie. And in my personal opinion, it doesn't work. The title just doesn't work. The rest of the movie's great, but the title's horrible.
You think that's one of, like, the tropes that the producers are like, I'm paying this much money, it better be this.
Yeah, yeah. So, but Not Suitable for Work makes the title NSFW. So it is a workplace comedy meets Friends. Mm. In the sense that you have the guys living across the hall from the girls. They all have jobs, so it's very heavy on the workplace, but there's, like, it's like half and half. It's a half and half split. So you see all their work lives and you see their home lives in the apartment building. And it's funny and it's more on the adult side, so they can use the crass language and stuff like that, which is great. And they can have the sexual innuendos are a little bit more deeper than like a Friends. My problem with it is I don't think the title fits. I think it needs a better title. I don't mind it. I think it's kind of cool that someone found a way to make NSFW a title of a show. Mm-hmm. But I do think the title doesn't fit. The other problem is the dude that's clearly the Ross, the guy in the show that's clearly like the Ross, he is the most obnoxious character on the show, and he's got the most punchable face.
So he's Ross.
And it's literally, I'm like, I just can't stand this guy, and it's basically because he's just a massive douche. Like, he really is. And it's not the actor. It's not the actor's fault in any way. It's literally the writing and the direction of that character. It drives me nuts. But the show itself, other than that, is pretty solid.
Nice.
The other thing that I started watching is Off Campus on Amazon Prime. And I've been being told a lot to watch this show. This show is a rom-com to the fullest extent. I'm going to tell you this right now. I'm halfway through. That's why this is the one I'm going to save my review till we're done.
Okay.
Till I'm finished, so I'll save that for next. My full review will be next week, but I'm halfway through it. The story itself is, for the most part, it's kind of predictable the way a rom-com is, but every character is fantastic. The writing is fantastic. The love story is fantastic, even though it's a little predictable. It's really well put together. The acting is also top-notch. It's almost like someone said, hey, we're going to make a rom-com with all the standard tropes, and we're going to make it a rated R comedy. So you have all of the rated R comedy type stuff, whether it be the bad language, the, you know, the sexual innuendos, the sex and nudity, the, like, there's a, it's very adult, but it's really good. So
not suitable for work. Definitely,
definitely not suitable for work. So we'll save that review for later. But for right now, let's talk about Disclosure Day, Steven Spielberg's most recent film, probably John Williams' last. Mm-hmm. Scored film, or real close to his last scored film, because Spielberg apparently begged him to come out of the woodwork to do this.
Yeah, that was surprising. I didn't know that he was the composer until after the movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, because I went in knowing that. So, but a movie where the government, or the disclosing of the government secrets that aliens exist, is what this movie is about. Peter, I'm going to start with you like I always do. What do you think?
Yeah, okay, so first of all, John Williams, I do remember the music being quite good. The movie is very detail-oriented. You're basically watching So first of all, you have this main guy who's stolen a lot of footage from the government agency that he works for that has evidence of extraterrestrial life and UFOs and sorry, we're going full on spoilers.
Yes, we are doing full spoilers, but I think there's more than just footage. I think he's got a lot of paper documents.
Oh, sure,
too,
sure. Right? I was kind of generalizing. Okay. Kind of the point I was getting to is that this guy has a lot of stolen files, documents, footage, whatever, of alien life. And he is kind of on the run. Like, he's stolen it. People are hunting him down. The movie is very detail-based, where I want to say, like, pretty close to halfway through, you're putting a lot of pieces together. You're trying to figure out what's going on. And because of that, I don't think I gave John Williams' score maybe the best observance that I should have while watching the movie. Like, I kind of feel like I need to watch it again just to enjoy the music, especially like you, what you said right there, Drew, like, this is potentially John Williams' last film. I think the music definitely deserves that from me, so that's one of the things. This is a movie that I like. I feel kind of lukewarm on in certain ways, and I think a lot of that has to do with, like, my expectations for the movie. I say that as somebody who, like, for a long time, I think since I was, like, 11 or 12, I've been fascinated by UFOs and alien life and, you know, just watching old Discovery Channel documentaries on it, or, you know, being glued to the TV for, like, Ancient Aliens back when that was on History Channel all the time and stuff. Like, I've always been really into this. And the movie, I think, as a whole, doesn't necessarily show anything from that aspect that I was really shocked by. Like, I kind of feel like I wish that they went deeper into some of that lore, you know? Like, and, like, not obviously it's a movie, so it's not going to be realistic per se, but I think after I watched the movie, I think I was hoping there was going to be more to the alien side of things, like the facts about the alien life they showed and stuff like that. Now, sitting with the movie, because we saw it this past weekend and I've been sitting with it and thinking about it all week, I think I've kind of realized, like, this movie is more, if you think of it more, if you're looking for a movie that's going to be showing you some, like, in-depth lore about, like, these, like, new alien secrets and stuff, I don't think the movie gives you that. But I think the movie gives you a really intricate, intense, sort of almost like fugitive story about a couple different groups of people running from this government agency who's trying to cover up the evidence of, again, like, this guy with all these documents that he's, like, about to expose. And then the other half of it is Emily Blunt's character, who is this meteorologist, like, who works at a news station, who is somehow, like, channeling, like, alien language, like, while she's on air. And she's kind of on the run trying to find out the secrets of her own past while also kind of trying to figure out what's even going on. And I think looking at it as, like, more of the intense chase story of, like, these different characters on the run, I think that's what's giving me a lot more satisfaction out of the movie, as opposed to going into the movie and, like, trying to see, like, you know, what are the alien secrets within this world that Steven Spielberg is presenting to us. So I don't know if that all makes sense where I'm coming from it, but that's kind of where I'm sitting. And that's kind of my vague thing. So I don't know if either of you want to jump in with, like, your thoughts, or if you want to start breaking down specifics or
where we're sitting. Well, Sean, give me your first initial thoughts, and then I'll break down some of my initial things, because I like, it was that thing where, like, the three of us, I feel like we walked out of that movie, and for the most part, we enjoyed it, but we're also like, I gotta sit with this.
Yeah.
Like, I can't talk about it. Then we get home and our wives are all like, why are you guys dark? And we're like, what are you talking about? Like, you guys just brought, like, this dark aura. Like, sorry, we're just processing. Like,
if
what
that's,
we watched.
Well, if that's one thing I can say about the movie that was awesome, it is a movie that you can see, and you might love it, you might hate it, but it is something that sits with you and you will be thinking about all week. Because that's one thing that left on me. And you never want to see, if you watch a movie and you forget about it, and, like, 2 days later you can't even tell me, like, plot points and stuff, that's a bad movie. But this is a movie that sticks with you. It is one that you think about, whether you love it or hate it. And that's, like, kind of the best thing that any director could hope for. So
It is very memorable, and certain things are not hard to recall and bring back and discuss and everything. I went in... maybe I had my own high expectations because it's Spielberg. And I know all the great accomplishments he's gotten and he's reached, whether it's like Indiana Jones or E.T., any of those. I know the quality, and so I was very satisfied with that. And I didn't think about it at the time, but Peter kindly reminded me that, like, yeah, but it did show, like, how great of a filmmaker he is. Like, the chase scene, especially with the train and the car and the other car.
The train sequence was awesome. That was one of those, like... proper camera work and all that stuff. That was awesome.
Yeah, that was fantastic. I did see, and I didn't watch the previews, and I've been trying to do my best not to watch previews, not like another person that we know that just is like hell-bent against anything in the media, but I try not to watch previews because certain ones...
You're talking about Jar Jar, right?
Right, yeah. Just... No. Like, certain teaser trailers are great, and they get you excited and everything, but like any of the full-length trailers... show way too much of the story, and then I don't even need to go see the movie because, like, I already know everything that's going to go on, and they showed me, like, the best parts. But, like, this one, I didn't know anything going in aside from Matt Spielberg. I did see one...
The teaser in this, you're like, I don't know what I saw. And then you go watch the full trailer, and you're like, I don't know what I saw, but I'm going to go see it. Mm-hmm. Like, right? So...
I do want to listen to the score again, and instead of watching the movie again, I want to listen to the music first... to see if I can recall which parts of the movie and what's going on, so I can, like, piecemeal it into my brain, like listening to a book that's being read to you. I felt a little underwhelmed, and that's actually why I was really quiet after seeing the movie with you guys, because I didn't want to influence either of your guys' opinions of the movie and, like, you know, override or, like, take away from something that you thought was really good or really
That's the worst
impactful.
Part is a lot of times when Peter and I have been doing this for 7 years, it's save it for the podcast. Mm-hmm. Like, we've seen each other at family parties. Did you see it? Yeah. Okay, cool. I guess we'll talk later.
Right.
Like, weirdest.
We've gotten better at it, but a lot of times it's like, I'll give you a brief opinion, and then I'm like, but I'll go in more detail, like, next week.
Yeah. It's just like, well, I guess I gotta hold off a lot of my thoughts,
So I might have built it up a little bit too much with, like, the hype and whatnot. There was one thing that I saw from the press of, like, Spielberg promoting the movie. And so the whole movie, I was, like, looking for this one thing. Like, what's this going to be that's going to, like, really, like, make me really think and reevaluate stuff? And that just kind of didn't happen. So I think I got, like, that preconceived notion of trying to, like, get something out of it. Whether it's going to be there or not, or you know what it is or not. So if you haven't seen it, like, maybe just go in without knowing stuff or expecting things.
Well, I think also,
that might,
like,
just give you a better experience.
Cause, and I didn't know if we were going to go into this, and I can comment on a little bit what you're talking about, Sean, because there is, Spielberg did, have some quotes that, kind of the press went nuts with, like, relating to, like, oh, you know, after, like, Christians watch this movie, they're going to question their own faith and stuff. Now, a lot of that was just stuff that Spielberg said in press interviews, and it would be like a quote taken out of context. Like, it'd be like one half of a sentence taken out of context, and then from there you have these clickbait publications online who go wild because they know they can put this one quote out there and people will get, like, really pissed about it without even listening to the full quote. And when you actually look at what Spielberg said, you're like, well, that's not even that bad. So I think that's one thing that, not even this movie, just in general, like, you have to remember we live in this world of clickbait, and people take the stupidest stuff out of context and use
it
to drum up controversy.
It's like you see an article that says DC Comics has officially replaced Batman. And you're like, what? And you click on the article. You click on the article, and they're, like, talking about the Clayface movie. Yep. And you're like, they didn't replace Batman. The Clayface movie is coming out. Like, that's clickbait. Yep. It made me click on the article. It's stupid.
Right.
So, yes, I hear you. Go ahead, Sean.
I have one critical thing. I was making sure not to be, like, hypercritical of this movie, given the nature of it or anything going on or whatever. But because I've played so many first-person shooters and I've gone paintballing, there's one scene that drove me crazy Okay. Because I am all for the good guy, and I'm all for rooting for the underdog, but there's a part where he tries to take cover and sneak around something, and I'm sorry, but I would have seen you.
Which part of the movie is that? Oh, when where, he, I know
he's creeping back up to the safe place, and yes. Bad guys are there, and he's just, like, trying to, like,
there's all get the, away like, and escape federal or whatever. Cars, and he, like, climbs through the fence. I know what you're talking
I'm
about,
like,
yeah.
Dude, that bush is not deep enough. You are so noticeable right now.
I thought the same thing, like, dude, just run the other way. Like, but I guess he's trying to save, like, his girlfriend at the house and stuff. But I know what you mean. Like, there's probably a more sneaky way you could accomplish that.
The big thing that I thought was interesting about a movie like this is it's a guy who stole a bunch of stuff and he's on the run.
Yeah.
You don't get to see the heist. They drop you in the middle of the story. There's a whole section that you didn't get to see that happened off screen. They drop you right into the middle. He's on the run. Here we go, and you're on your adventure. And because of that, you as an audience have to piece things together. And I love movies that do this. So for the first hour of this film, you're like, I don't know what the hell is going on. And you're getting information along with everyone he has to talk to about this. You're getting information along with them. So you're learning things as you go. So him talking to Coleman Domingo, you're like, how is Coleman Domingo connected to this?
Yeah.
I don't understand. Like, this chick's connected. Okay. And all of a sudden, Emily Blunt's character and her connection to him, like, there's a lot of what the hell is going on for about an hour. All right? Then things start to fall into place and all the connections start making. You're like, oh, okay, because of that thing over here and this thing. And I love that was such a brilliant part of the storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
I loved that third act. So it was like from the train sequence to the end of the film was just, in my opinion, just cinematic gold. Cool camera work, cinematography, acting, everything top notch. Especially when you got to the media scenes and they had to actually like disclose the information.
Yeah.
And they're doing all the behind in the booth, queuing things up. The way it's all edited, bouncing back from the different news networks and all that stuff so they could get things, because it's a local station trying to broadcast to New York who needs to broadcast to the rest of the world and all that stuff. But seeing the footage of the aliens, the way that was all played out, and it got, in my opinion, for me at least, it got pretty emotional. Like, I almost rolled a tear in the middle of that. I was like, holy, like, it really hit me. I was like, holy cow. There is some spoilery type stuff that I like, yeah, we're going to talk spoilers, but I don't want to get too deep in because I want people to go enjoy this movie without knowing certain things. I don't want to be like, you're going to see the following, right? Like,
I think the two kind of main characters and how their past intertwine, and even me saying that is saying too much, I don't think we should get into that because I think that's too big
and,
of a
and some
thing.
Of that third act stuff where they start showing the footage, I think that stuff we should be quiet about, but some of the things you see, it's like, holy crap.
Yeah.
Right, it's incredible, and it's very Spielberg in the sense it's almost like this guy stole the documents for everything that happened at Devil's Tower in Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Yeah,
and then now we're actually seeing the footage that is proving it to the world that this event happened.
Well, how?
Right, and I know they talk about Roswell, and they talk about some very specific ones, but it's the fact that Spielberg did Close Encounters of the Third Kind. And then he comes over and does this.
Now, I didn't miss anything. They didn't have any clips from, like, Close Encounters.
Not that I saw,
no. Because, like, that would... So I don't know if that would have been cooler or not. Because it would have been cool to see it, like, oh, this is, like, a connected universe sort of thing. But is it better for a movie like this to feel more real world, you know? Because I feel like that's what it was really trying to be more of a real world thing.
Wow.
So if they did show like one of the Close Encounters ships, like would that have cheapened it? That's like kind of a
hell,
good debate.
Close Encounters,
movie,
I think, was trying to be real world too.
But you know what I mean, because
you're
watching it
you.
And that whole like news disclosure segment, if you see like E.T.'s ship like in the background at one part, there's part of you that's like, okay, this stopped being real as soon as it like that now it's connected.
Right.
Now it's in the world of movies as opposed to the real world we're living in. And I think that was one of the strengths of the movie is it did feel very real world. It felt like this would be an actual thing that the government's trying to keep covered up, and then you could imagine them trying to bring this news to the populace. It probably would play out kind of like that way. Drew, I'm with you. The whole like news channel control room segments where it's like it shows like because the the news station they broke everything on was in Kansas City, but then it shows like the control room in New York where they're like, oh no, we need to switch to Kansas City's feed and see what they're showing us. And then it starts bouncing back and forth to different control rooms.
Because there's a point where
that was really
like,
cool.
There's a point where everyone's in complete shock and awe. And then the news guys behind the booths are like, okay, hold on, hold on, hold on. And then they start calling shots and giving direction. And then there's moments where they stop their direction and they're like back to the shock and awe part. And they're like, okay, hold on. And then they have to bounce again, right? Like, it's incredible. Like, it was so good. I know you guys have never watched Newsroom.
I watched some of
and
it,
I've
like
told
an
you,
episode
And I've
or
told
two,
you guys,
so.
You real, and I've always recommended it to you guys, but you really should. It's phenomenal, but they do a lot of that control room stuff in that show, which is, like, it's great. Overall, I really, really liked the movie. It sits with me. It's a movie I definitely want to watch again.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to watch it again. Any final thoughts? Anything you guys
wanted
to, like,
the one
really
last thing
jump on?
The one last thing I'll say is Sean did mention, which I kind of forgot talking to him about this, but it is one thing after we watched the movie, because I was talking to Sean a little bit, and he was maybe criticizing certain things. And the one thing I could kind of say is, like, and not saying you, not
Sean's
you,
the jerk of the
no,
family.
You were kind of, no, not even that, just, like, you had, like, little critiques, and the one thing, like, I could say is, like, yeah, but this does show how good of a, you already said it, like, how good of a filmmaker Spielberg is, and, like, if you look at the camera shots, like, the movie is shot so well, like, the opening shot of this movie, I thought was genius, because they're at, like, a UFC match, and the cameras opens up with, you're in the point of view of somebody whose face is being stepped on by the other wrestler.
Oh.
That was so awesome. Because I'm one who, like, the opening shot of the movie has to grab you. And I hate when a movie just, it's the opening shot and it just shows a random car driving down the highway or something. I want it to be something engaging. I want it to fade out. Like, look at Star Wars. Like, you get the star field and then the camera pans down and then you see two ships. It's an engaging thing. And this was so engaging, having you being kicked in the face, like, right when the movie opened.
Now, that being said, there was a point where, like, I asked Peter before we went, like, when was the last time you saw a movie in IMAX, like, true IMAX? And he goes, well, it's been a while. Like, all right. So we walk in and the two of you looked at the size of that screen and I saw it. Peter just goes, nice. Like, he saw the size of the screen, and that's what he said. And then we're, like, watching previews, and he kind of turns his head and he goes, is this how you watch everything? And I'm like, yes, it is.
Well, it's just one of those things, like, certain movies are IMAX movies to me, certain ones are not. So I was just, like, wondering, you know.
No, like, if I could see the back rooms that way, I would have seen the back rooms
see,
that way.
See, back rooms
you know
would
I
be
sick. Like,
back rooms a movie, but I was just wondering if, like, when the new Romeo and Michelle movie comes out, are you going to see it in IMAX?
I
or,
have a
you
feeling
know?
That won't get an IMAX release. Some
okay,
things,
fair
some
enough,
things
fair
don't.
Enough.
Like, you know, back rooms did not, for example, right? But I will, if I can see it in IMAX, I will see it in IMAX. So, and it's really interesting because IMAX is loud. And I don't know how, if I, like, because I warned you, too, like, hey, it's loud, be prepared for that. And then that first kick, the opening shot is a kick to the face, and it, but it's at the camera.
Yeah.
That was a loud hit.
Oh, yeah,
that
was sick.
How did you guys, like, Sean's just nodding his head, like.
I was trying to sit far enough back for the entire screen to be in my glasses so I can see everything.
Well, and that's the what I love about seeing an IMAX 3D is that you sit where I sit, it's close enough to the screen, so I can't see the edges of my glasses within, like, you see what I'm saying? Like, because I always feel like 3D is an illusion. Yes, it's an illusion, but if you can see the edges, it breaks the illusion a little bit, where, like, if you can't see the edges.
Right?
If you can't see the edges, you're, like, consumed. So I sit where I sit because I can't see the edges on the peripheral, right? So, like, everything is more encompassing when you're watching something in 3D. But it's the same thing with, like, any IMAX presentation, right? So I can't wait to see The Odyssey that way, too.
Right.
I can't wait for a studio to produce the Iliad so I can see the first half of the story and then go watch The Odyssey.
He might, you know what? He might have called it The Odyssey as a general title, and it might cover all of it.
You gotta remember
the runtime of that movie. He might have the whole thing in there.
You gotta remember marketing too, because we live in a world where the Iliad might not be as marketable of a title as the Odyssey. So that's like,
but everybody's all about the origin story.
I know,
and that's one that hasn't been done on TV.
Well,
No, but that's the only thing I was saying, though, is that the way the movie's shot, there's a lot of really cool, like, as after that wrestling match part that I was just talking about, you have the character who walks out the back of the building with some other guys who escort him, and, you know, there's a bunch of, like, federal agents there to meet him, and there, you know, that leads into, like, a crazy chase scene. But the way everything's shot, like, as he's walking out of the building, there's this cool, like, the camera's, like, kind of behind the federal agents, and it sweeps through, and then you zoom in on the guy, like, through an open door from, like, this car. Watching this movie, and again, like, part of me, like, I don't know if I loved the, like, I liked it, I don't know if I loved the story, but the execution is, like, watching this movie, I'm like, this is why Spielberg is one of the GOATs, because it's shot so well, the acting so well. So that's, like, the thing is, like, it's so well executed. Story-wise, I think that's my only thing, is I just had to kind of weather my expectations. I think I wanted a little bit more to the alien lore. Like, I wanted something in the movie to pique my interest from, like, somebody who loves, like, conspiracy theories and stuff. I wanted something in the movie to pique my interest and then me go home and research some more real-world alien stuff. But again, as a suspenseful story kind of about fugitives on the run and, like, cool stuff like that, I think it really executed what it wanted to do. I think the alien stuff, I just wish there was a little bit more. So that's kind of where I'm sitting at.
Sure. Okay. Anything final for you that you wanted to add real quick?
I thought it was good. I want to listen to the music again.
And that is all.
I thought it was good.
Yep.
Great. I have a feeling this is just from the movie, I have a feeling that that's probably, if we were going to do Oscar nominations right now, that definitely probably makes a Best Picture nomination. If you were to drop the hammer right now, it's probably in the Best Picture category at the moment.
Sure.
I know we still have a whole half the year left to come, but if you were to drop it right now, that's probably one of your Best Picture noms.
And it'll be accompanied by 4 based on true stories.
Maybe. Maybe. All right, let's hop into the news. We do have a couple things. First off, Star Wars timeline officially moving past Rise of Skywalker for the first time in 7 years. I hate the title of this because we know this, right? It's because we have Starfighter,
mm-hmm.
right? I literally almost said Skywalker. Starfighter coming out with Ryan Gosling. That they've already said that that's going to be a launching pad for 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12. Sorry, I don't know what I'm talking about. So it officially, they say it's officially followed up. So followed by Daisy Ridley's return in New Jedi Order. I heard that movie is on hold and or canceled, and Starfighter sets up 8, 9, and 10. This comes from MovieWeb. This does not come directly from Lucasfilm. I don't know what to say about it. They need to earn the trust back of their audience. So we shall see.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I didn't. I just wanted to say confirmed, I guess, if it's real. all right.
Confirmed, maybe.
All right. Sword Art Online. Peter, we've talked about this a little bit. Sean, you haven't watched Sword Art yet, have you?
I have not.
Okay. When you get done with Vox Machina and Mighty Nein, seriously, put those in front of it. But, okay. I'm going to tell you 2 things that you need to watch, and they're on the anime level. So, 1, you need to watch Sword Art just so we can talk to you about it, because you keep hearing us talk about it. So go watch Sword Art so we can talk about it. And 2, this is for both of you, watch Solo Leveling if you have access to watch it. It's unbelievably good. It's 2 seasons. It'll go by quick. And when I say it'll go by quick, it's going to go by quick because you're going to be like, okay, next episode, please. Next episode, please. It's incredible.
Interesting.
Yeah, and it falls in the Sword Art idea in the sense of like the video game mechanics, but it's real world, and that's something I can explain to you offline without taking up too much of the podcast. But I think if you don't know what Solo Leveling is, go check it out.
It's like Sword Art, but it's offline.
Well, do they co-op?
Yeah, you know what? That's a weird kind of almost correct statement, but we will.
It's like Star Wars meets I'll Matrix, tell you about later. But anyway, it's cartoon.
Sword Art Online has a movie. Sorry, they have a video game releasing this July called Echoes of Aincrad. Now, in all of these Sword Art video games that exist, you play as characters within the universe.
So, like, you'll be like, oh, I'm playing it, so I can play as Kirito. I can play as Asuna or Sinon or, like, characters from the Sword Art universe you can play as the games. Mm-hmm. This is the first game coming out where you get to make your character and go into the universe, which your character as is, which is how that game should function, because that a game like that should function, because Sword Art Online is an MMO. This is not going to be an MMO. It's going to be an offline game where you can just go and play and kind of enjoy a story, like a la like a Skyrim or something, but you get to make your character and go. But because of that, there is a CGI animated film coming that's going to it's from Bandai Namco is doing it. It's going to take place around the time frame of the game that's coming out, so it's supposed to coincide with the game. The plot for it, Kirito, the main character from the franchise, goes rogue as an orange player. Peter knows what that means because he's seen it. Wiping out entire scouting parties, original characters from the game. Imram, if I'm pronouncing that right, and Rex team up with Asuna to uncover the mystery of why the Black Swordsman has turned to the dark side.
Cool.
Sounds cool. Yeah. I'm in, right? More details are going to come in July, because they're going to release a whole bunch of info in July. We also have there's a brand new original anime movie coming for Sword Art, which that's going to be part of the standard animation, not like a 3D animated CGI thing. Yeah. That has nothing to... That ties in with the main franchise stuff. Details on that will release in July as well. And finally, Season 5 has been announced. We'll get details in July. So, just some news that we're going to get as we get closer to July. So,
awesome.
Any thoughts on Sword Art before I move on?
No, yeah.
I want to see it.
I've been enjoying it. It's been taking me way longer to get through than I thought, but I also just don't have a lot of watching time that... I don't have the amount of personal watching time that I'd like in my life.
It's all good.
But it's kind of funny because I'm like, I'm on season 4, I'm like, I'm almost there, and then now we're adding some more seasons, so that's going to be pretty fun.
Yeah.
I'm going to be living in that world
Have to finish season 4 and then watch the 2 Asuna movies.
Yeah.
And the 2 Asuna movies will go fast, and I think you're really going to like them.
Sure.
They're solid. But they go quick. So just watch them in release order.
Okay, yeah.
Because otherwise
you can't wrong with the release order.
No,
right?
Like they're very meant to be back-to-back, but because the titles are confusing, so if you look at the release dates, you're going to go, oh, that's the one I watch first.
Okay.
All right, Department of Justice has officially approved the merger of Warner Brothers and Paramount.
There
are still hoops they have to jump through, so this is not 100% done deal, but it's another step forward, so we shall see as we get closer. That being said, in the world of mergers, and I almost said this during the watching and reading category, if you have not logged into your Disney Plus account, do so, and at the bottom of the screen, there should be a window that says link your Hulu account. When you click on that, it'll ask you to select a profile. You will then click link account, and it'll take all your content from your Hulu account and merge it. Now, you can still access your Hulu account, but for right now, everything will go to your Disney Plus, because at some point this year, Hulu goes away. We don't know how that's going to work, but after I linked my first profile, because like I had to go and link every profile, but after I linked my first profile, I got an email from Disney saying, please make sure all your profiles are linked for the going changes. And I thought that was interesting. So if you have not done that, if you haven't logged into your Disney Plus in a while, make sure you do so, because I don't know what happens if you don't.
Well, so. They've also already done like a soft merger too, because if you open up Disney Plus, it doesn't go straight into Disney. It goes into
the for you category.
It is,
right?
And it's all three of their things. And then it shows like everything that would be in any one of them.
Yeah,
it's like a Disney warp zone you go into right away.
But under your Hulu tab, under your continue watching for Hulu, when you link your account, all of that gets pushed into Disney. So your continue watching is Disney and all the Hulu stuff combined. So, which was kind of nice to see. All right. I have been talking about this quite a bit. We're going to talk about the Stargate thing for a minute. Real briefly, I have been on Twitter very vocal. I'm like, guys, you got to do this. Come on, Amazon. Come on, Amazon. Come on, Amazon. A lot of people have been talking about it. I don't know if it's breaking your guys' internet feed or not, but for me, I can't turn on Twitter without seeing like thousands of like... And it's actually interesting. Amazon, one of the guys has been taking Amazon promotional stuff
So, like, they're promoting some other program, and they're saying, and people are going, that's cool, but, and then dropping all the Stargate stuff. Like, they're responding to it and saying, that's cool, but, and they're like, it's, which I think is kind of funny, but when the Snyder Cut was going on and they were paying for big billboards to erected, it's starting to happen again. And I thought this was interesting. They have a fandom-funded banner plane to fly Save Stargate directly over Amazon Studios in Culver City and just kind of circle the studio for a while. Like, this isn't a joke. And it's so weird because, and I don't want to get into it, but it's so weird that they have everything, like, lined up perfect, exactly what they want, and then because they disagreed with one thing, they canceled it. And it's just like, guys, you're kind of screwing yourself. And at this point, as a Stargate fan, it's okay to say you made a mistake and reinstate the program. You've already spent all the money. Everything's in place. There's nothing wrong with saying, hey, it was a short-sighted, quick decision we made. We shouldn't have made it. We're giving you the Stargate show you want. You know what I mean? This, in my opinion, there's nothing wrong with that.
I think that's awesome. I think it's kind of fun. I mean, the whole situation sucks. Like, we wish the Stargate show should have happened. They have no excuse. I think it's kind of fun because of, I mean, we've lived through a pandemic this decade. We've lived through riots, like, all sorts of crazy stuff. And it's kind of fun to have something like this to stand, like, something like this to protest, you know? It's kind of like, it makes me kind of feel like the world's healing in certain ways.
We're protesting this. Yeah. here's something to protest. Rocksteady is reportedly developing a new AAA Batman game. That's not something to protest. That's something to cheer about.
Yeah.
Right? I'll get to the protest part in a second. I'm really excited about it. I played all the Arkham games. They're phenomenal. The only one I haven't played yet is the one for the Oculus, which is literally as soon as my kid lets me touch the Oculus, I will get that game in because I have it. I just haven't been able to play it.
you say that, and I know this isn't true, but I just imagine your kid, like, 24/7 living in the Oculus or something like that.
But every time
he takes it off of his face.
Every time I think that I'm going to play it, he's playing it. I'm like, ooh, I'm going to play it. Nope, he's got it in his head. You know what I mean? So at some point I will get it on and I'll play the Arkham game they put on the Oculus. But this is the part to protest. It says the game is going to serve as canonical origin for James Gunn's Batman. I have a problem with that because, and like, I this my opinion on this is like 50-50. So Peter, please weigh in if you want to jump in on this. But the idea that when James Gunn announced his plan, he had plans for video games, comics, television, movies, all of it to be linked together. So it's a full flowing continuity, which is awesome, and I appreciate that.
Yeah.
But saying that it's the canonical origin makes me go, well, I guess I have to play the game now. And that's not... And it's going to force people. It's kind of like when Star Wars put the Emperor's message that was reported in the opening crawl for Episode 9 in the video game of Fortnite. I never actually saw that. I never got to hear it. I didn't even look it up on YouTube. I just remember seeing the opening crawl and like, oh, that's cool. There was a thing like someone heard a voice of the Emperor and they were like, what's this about? Nope, we all heard it. If you would have played Fortnite, which had nothing to do with anything.
Yeah, yeah.
Bonehead mistake. So this is what made me think about it. So thoughts?
Go ahead.
I think there's a way to do it. James Gunn, obviously, like you said, he's trying to do this like multi different kinds of media all converging into one universe. So there's a lot of people who like they went to see James Gunn's Superman movie, but they didn't necessarily watch Creature Commandos, right? And so, like, we were kind of, you know, there was a lot of Rick Flagg Sr. stuff in the Creature Commandos show that a lot of these people who saw Superman wouldn't know those tidbits about that character. The idea of, like, a Batman video game introducing this DCU version of Batman and his origin story, I think there's a way to do it where you can still have a big screen Batman movie and maybe it doesn't show the origin, kind of like Matt Reeves' The Batman, Tim Burton's Batman from 1989. Yep. There's a way to do it where you introduce the character and maybe he's already established and there's lines of dialogue or brief flashbacks that show the origin or allude to the origin, but you're still being thrown right into the midst of the battle. I mean, think about James Gunn's Superman, how many origin details weren't in there. We were just kind of thrown right into the midst of things, like right into the middle of a fight scene. The movie starts and there's all these characters, and then there's the Justice Gang over here, and there's all this weird stuff going on. It sounds like it's right up James Gunn's alley. I'm really liking the way that James Gunn is doing this stuff, because to me, it reminds me of when I pick up a random DC comic book, and maybe I haven't been keeping up with that title, but I like the writer, the artist who took over, and I'm just like, okay, I enjoy the art, let's see what happens, open the comic book. I don't know what's going on. I'll use Wikipedia. Maybe I'll use YouTube to fill me in on some of the highlights of what came before, and then I'm just going to enjoy it moving forward. It feels very comic book-y to me, so I don't have too much of a problem with it. But anyway, Sean, I didn't mean to derail you there. So
you're fine. You gave me more time to put together a thought. I'm getting really jaded with the entertainment industry. And
we all are. I don't know what you're talking
about. The powers that be in it need to decide if they are businessmen or if they are entertainers. And if they're entertainers, great. Entertain, but don't try to suck me dry out of my bank account. And if you're a businessman,
okay,
that's fine.
Good luck with that protest.
Well, do your thing, but get your stupid nose out of entertainment. Like, that's just the worst part. Like, one of the most exciting things about the whole Avengers conglomeration with the MCU is all of these different movies are intertwining, which was super awesome and exciting, because then it's like, look at this fantastic challenge of making all of these things fit together and work, and you can literally watch them in an order and it all fits, and it's this nice little bow and everything. Sweet. But then it got exhausting because I had to throw in TV shows and cartoons and all of the other stuff.
And now you gotta play a video game.
And, you know, it's just reminding me, there's a nerdy band called Kirby Crackle. Hilarious band, really good music, really good instrumentation, but they have a great song called Another New Crisis, where the singer is talking about, even in the comic book industry, like, it got to the point that it's like, every single summer, the world is ending. All of existence is coming down and crashing. It's like, I don't care anymore. Sure. I'm not excited about this thing that you just brought up, because it's like, I don't want to invest all that time.
Well, if it's another art,
be able to jump in and enjoy what's there.
If it falls under the Arkham titles, I'm going to be front row, front seat. Those games are amazing. But yeah. I didn't know what to say about it. I'm like, this is weird. So
my perspective on what Sean's saying, because I actually agree with everything he's saying, I've just came to this conclusion where we're in this post-Endgame world. The MCU gave us too much too soon. It's so hard to keep up with, unless that's the one thing you're going to watch, which we like a variety of media. We're not only going to watch MCU. It's too hard to keep up with. So I've just been embracing what I said, the comic booky aspect, where you pick up a comic, you pick up a trade paperback or a new comic book series. There's things you won't know, because some people have, but it's very rare. Most people haven't read all of the DC Universe or all the Marvel Universe, and you do have to use Wikipedia. You do have to Google search things to get certain details. And even up to live-action movies, I've just came to embrace we're in the comic book era of things, and the comic book era in the way that I'm going to go in and I'm not going to know everything and I'm going to have to figure it out. And you might as well just embrace it and have fun with it. So that's kind of my perspective on this at this point. So I don't know.
Sure. No, I'm with you. All right. One more news story and then we'll hop on tonight's list. This is a quick one. This is my favorite one of the week. This made me laugh. We are getting... Did you guys watch the 21 Jump Street, 22 Jump Street? Did you guys watch those movies?
I watched the first one. I can't remember if I watched all the second one.
All right. I love it's those movies.
It's the same.
It's the same picture.
Essentially, it is. They do it to high school and then they go to college.
Yeah.
And then they have jokes in the closing credits of 22 Jump Street. They show you a pseudo trailer for 23 Jump Street, and then 24 Jump Street, 25 Jump Street, and 26 Jump Street, and then they jump to like 32 Jump Street and so on. They show you a lot. It's throughout the credits. It's so funny. I love it. Those movies are great. We are officially getting 24 Jump Street.
Nice.
they're skipping 23.
I was going to ask about that. Yeah, but
now this is great. This makes me want to purchase them. So I have
23
them on the
Jump Street's going to be a prequel video game. They're
no,
release,
this
right?
What happened? Was,
everyone's going to be looking at your wall in library of discs and saying, "Where's number 3?"
Well, that's why I want to. That's why I honestly think I need to purchase these so they're on the shelf. So when someone asks, like, "You're missing 23," no, I'm actually not.
It's
what
like
happened
a high school
was
prank with the
they've
face.
Been they were trying they couldn't get 23 off the ground. There were too many. There were too many conflicts, scheduling conflicts, and all this other stuff. The 23 couldn't happen. They decided to skip it altogether and just go right to 24.
That's awesome.
And the tagline right now reads, "It took so long, we had to skip one."
I hope there's jokes about stuff that happens in 23 that you never got to see.
I agree. I am 100% with you. That's amazing. I think it's the best story of the week just because we're getting another one, but they're skipping one for a really cool reason.
I have a lot of Deadpool-esque, like, you know, breaking the fourth wall sort of jokes.
Yeah.
Relating to the DVD shelf, what you should do is put 21 Jump Street, 22... the number 23 with Jim Carrey, and then move into 24 Jump Street. And if you have everything in alpha numerical order,
yeah,
that's the way it would make sense anyway. So
yeah, that'd be hilarious.
Destroy his autobiography.
And then
order.
28 days later, and then, yeah, 28 days, I guess.
Well, how about this? That's the end of the news, guys. Do you guys want to talk about tonight's list?
Yeah, let's go for
it. Awesome. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
And now for the top 5.
All right, Peter, this was your pick for our 400th episode.
Yeah.
I hope this is the choice you felt was best for our 400th episode. No, I'm kidding. what are we talking about this week? Your choice for the top 5.
No, I didn't think it was because 400 snuck up on us. I know, like, weeks before we were just kind of like talking, like, we got to think of something good. And then last week, Drew, like, during the podcast you're recording, you're like, by the way, 400's next week. I'm like, crap, I think I kind of picked a dumb list. But then I thought about it. I'm like, no, this one actually might work. So this week we're talking about our favorite action figures. And this is a fun list because this goes, what is that look? Sean is giving me the weirdest look right now.
How have you not done favorite action figures yet?
We've done our favorite collectibles. We've done some stuff like that, but we've never done, like, specifically action figures. I thought this was a cool list because we all collect action figures. We love it. But it's one of those things you can spend a lot of money on action figures, keep them in the box, put them in a nice display case. But we all grew up playing with toys like this. Like, you can go back to your old, like, Ninja Turtles and He-Man action figures. You can, there's kind of like this sort of, like, all through, at least my life, there's been action figures and toys that I've been buying and loving. And it's kind of a cool spectrum from, like, your childhood memories up to your nerdy adult sort of fandom. So I thought this would be it kind of works as a really weird list, even though I almost thought of it as a goofy throwaway thing. I'm like, no, this could actually be pretty epic. And then I was like, we should bring a guest, and we brought on our brother Sean, which, Sean, I thought you were the perfect guest for this list because you love action figures maybe more than anybody else I know. I know, like, I've been with you to a number of, like, whether it's, like, retro shops or nerd shops or comic shops, you're always looking at the action figures. Where I'm actually, like, a lot of times I'm more like, give me some reading material, I'm going to buy some comics or manga or DVDs,
yeah, it's
whatever
the,
it is.
The interest has changed. I'm not looking at action figures the same way I used to.
But Sean is constantly, like, that's kind of his main thing usually. You've got a number of, like, cool Batman ones. You've got, like, I don't know how many Joker ones, but I feel like you're always attracted to the Joker ones, especially. But I just thought you'd be a perfect guest for this list because I've seen you in the comic shop and I've seen what draws your eye. And, like, Sean would be a really good thing. And it's fun to get a guest on an episode like this when it's, like, a milestone thing. So I just thought this was going to be a really fun, cool conversation. I don't know if either of you have any main thoughts you want to go through or, you know, where we're going
I'll,
here.
I'll
stand
so. To Sean here in a minute in terms of, like, if you've listened to the show enough, Sean, you're not only do you listen to the show, thank you for doing so, but you also send us text messages every now and then going, this is my pick, so you know how the game works. One of the things that we always discuss is how did we feel about the list. Now here's the problem I had with the list. is that my interests have changed. My collecting habits have changed. I have, you guys are sitting in my palatial T5R yes. studio, and I have surrounding us all my Black Series Star Wars figures, which are all in package, not opened. So it's not like I've played with any of them, right? There's nothing out. There's nothing. I didn't put them in any cool poses. I didn't do anything like that. So it's a completely different mentality.
Sure.
And that's where I had trouble with my list, because I was like, I felt like I was like specifically focusing on stuff when I was a kid because I played with them. That was the whole point.
Yeah.
Right? And action figures, these guys are just statues that stay in the box and don't get touched because I'm hoping one day I'll be able to sell them. And I probably won't, because that's how things retain value these days. Right? Like, yeah. you know, someone will want them now, but if I tried to sell them in 20 years, people are going to be like, what? No, I don't want those. They you might. Know what? Maybe. Who knows? So that's where I found the list to be a little difficult. And I have a couple cheats on here, so please be patient that I have those cheats. But that's where I found it difficult. Otherwise, I was like, okay, I was able to come up with stuff pretty quickly, and then it was more on the side of, like, yeah, how it all played out. Mm-hmm. So,
I found this list extremely difficult.
Excellent.
But I really appreciate the way that Peter introduced the list for this episode, because now I'm not embarrassed to say that every time I walk into a Walmart, yes, the first thing I do is go to the Star Wars section.
And I go right to Legos.
I check right. the Legos, but, like, the toy aisle, even if I'm going for groceries, even if I'm going for toiletries, the first thing I do, or at least somewhere in my shopping journey, if it's Walmart, Target, anywhere, if there are toys, I'm going to that section. I am looking to see if there's anything cool, even if I just window shop.
For sure. Just so fun. Yeah.
Sure.
Just so fun.
Sure. Well, who wants to go first?
I have two honorable mentions. Well, I'm going to assume everybody else does.
I have one.
Wow.
I know.
We're in a room surrounded by action figures, and you couldn't come up with two?
I know. I got five, but I'll only say two.
I know. So, anyway, Peter's got to go last regardless, yep. but since I only have one, he's going to have to go before me. Do you have two?
Yes,
Sean?
I do.
Okay, so Sean, I'm going to make you go first, just because Peter has to go last, so go ahead.
You want both, or just...
Yep. So just cool. one, just whatever one you want to give me right now.
All
right,
so back in the day... when there was toys being made as like extras and you know, just additives to whatever the show or movie was, there was action figures for the Alien and Aliens and Alien 3, Alien Resurrection. Yeah. But there was a handful of aliens that it was just like snowballing off the idea of like any random creature. And one of my favorite, and this is one of my honorable mentions, is the Bull Alien from the Aliens action figures.
Classic.
Where it, you know, it's on all fours, but it had this fun action thing, and it was the Xenomorph, but it looked like a bull, and it had horns and everything, which was super fun, but it had a ramming action where you, like, synced it back and you press the button and yeah. it would go, poonk,
yeah.
like, into whatever was in front of it.
Yeah.
Super fun.
That's a fantastic one, and I really liked that wave, because after Alien 3, because it's always been a person... And then in Alien 3, it's a dog, unless you watch the director's cut, and it's a cow.
Mm-hmm.
But it's because it's a different animal, they go into, like, suddenly you had gorilla alien and bull alien, like, mm-hmm. all these different forms, and you're just like, oh, like, the imagination, you know, took off from there. So, good call.
I think I had the gorilla alien from that same series, but, yeah, those toys were awesome. And I want to say... Sean and I might have had those toys before we had even seen an Alien movie, but you're just a kid. You're just like, this is badass. Like, I love Aliens. I love Terminator. My parents won't let me watch these movies, but I still want that Terminator toy. You know, it's like that yeah. sort of mindset. So,
Peter, what do we got?
Okay, so most of mine I actually tried to find, like, really specific toys as far as, like, the year and the series and stuff. I tried to go a little nerdy as far as that goes. But my first honorable mention is one of my more vague ones. And one of my favorite action figure trends that... actually, I was going to say it was more popular in the 90s, but I actually think it's still pretty prevalent today. And it's the kind of oversized figures. I don't know if they're 10 inches or 12 inches, where okay. it's kind of the... you know, it's not a 6-inch figure. It's kind of the next size up. And it's like a...
Like the Barbie G.I. Joe size?
Yes, exactly.
Those are 12-inch, by the way. 12-inch, so not okay, like fair. The Jar Jar we have sitting here in Germany.
I think
it's
taller. This Jar Jar figure is 8-inch. I know we discussed that before.
If you compared it to the 6-inch Black Series Jar Jar, it's probably 8, right?
So I guess it would have been 12-inch. And I remember there was a lot of really cool Marvel figures from back in the 90s. Like, we had, like, some cool X-Men ones and stuff like that. But the one that I mentioned, that I wanted to talk about is, and this is another one where, Sean, you and I grew up and we shared a lot of toys. So if this was actually your figure that you owned, my apologies. But we had this really sick black suit Spider-Man 12-inch figure.
Yes.
And I loved it. And it just looked so cool. It was so cool to play with. It had, like, so many points of articulation. Like, that thing was so flexible, which you want for a Spider-Man toy. Because if you're a kid playing and you're making that thing web-sling, you want to be able to, you know, pull the legs up in, like, web-slinging style poses and make him crawl like an actual spider. This one has a little bit of a bittersweet ending, though, because this is a toy that I didn't have. Growing up, our family had one particular dog who ate through, I want to say, like, 80 or 90% of our toys that were lying around, and this is one of the toys that got chewed up. I loved the dog, but so many good toys were lost dog too. But this is one of those toys that got chewed up, and I still feel sad about it, because anytime I see one of those 12-inch figures, I'm like, it just takes me back to that sick black suit Spider-Man toy I had, and then I get sad again. But that's my first honorable mention. Excellent. So there you go.
All right, second honorable mention, Sean, you're up.
So this is one. This is actually the first action figure that I bought and kept. No, I did not buy it. It was given to me, but it's the first action figure I've ever had that I did not open it from its casing. And it's sitting on my shelf at home. It is the Long Halloween Joker.
Cool.
Okay.
It is sick. It looks exactly like the comic books. It's so nice, so pristine, and mint.
Based on Tim Sale artwork. Mm-hmm. One thing I've always loved about the DC figures is they have so many of them that are based on specific artists. Like, you can even find ones now based on, like, Jim Lee, or you see, like, the Frank Miller, like, you know, the Dark Knight Returns style Batmans and stuff. I've always really loved, I guess Marvel does this a little bit, but I always feel like DC does it more, but maybe that's just what I notice more when I go into the store, so.
I will go next because, I'll go next on this one because this is my only honorable mention. This is a little bit of a cheat, but it's not really even an action figure, but I felt it fit, especially for an honorable mention, but the Lego minifig in a general sense. Mm. Because Lego pulls, not only do they pull, like, licenses from Star Wars, Harry Potter.
You're going with the vague picks again. No, I see how it is.
This,
no, I'm just kidding.
This is a
like
vague
the video
pick.
Game environments.
Yeah, right. Yeah, fine. Screw you guys. I'm going with this because they have their licenses, your Star Wars, Harry Potter, Marvel, DC, One Piece, Lord of the Rings, whatever, right?
Yeah.
But even before they got the licenses, we played with Legos a lot when we were kids, and I can't tell you how many minifigs I went. You'd watch a movie and, like, all right, I got to make that character in Lego form. And
you guys would laugh at me when I
we
run
would
away
we would because we'd be watching a movie and you'd get up and leave like halfway through the movie, and before we got done with the movie you'd come back with a minifig created for the movie, which we always thought was funny. But at the end of the day, I mean, that's what people, like, who wouldn't, you know what I mean? Like, it just, that's what we did, right?
So, Sean, the reason we made fun of you for that was because you were the youngest, and it was something that we all did,
literally,
but you were the last one of us who is still doing it, like, to that day, so that's why we were laughing.
I'd also wait till the movie's over and then go figure it out. But we, you know, that's why. But at the end of the day, but that's what we did, right? You'd be like, hey, I gotta make that guy in Lego form. So, because of that, they became amazing action figures in the sense that that's just in the realm of imagination alone. So,
yeah, good call. I like this pick. This is something I've tried to explain to my son. Like, when I was a kid, we didn't have Batman Legos. We didn't have Star Wars Legos. I wanted Jedi Legos more than anything, but you had to figure out how to make it yourself. So, yeah, this is a really good call, especially from that creativity standpoint. So, good stuff.
Yeah. All right.
Back to me, I think.
To you, yes, for your last honorable mention.
So, this is a toy that I believe I've talked about on the show before. One of my favorite action figures, but it's an honorable mention, and I'll get into why, but the figure itself isn't that awesome. But at the time I got this figure, it meant like the world to me that I had it. And that is the original Violator toy from Spawn. We're talking early 90s, the original Spawn action figure series. And this is a thing, like, we lived in a small town. I probably could have gone to the local grocery shop and I probably could have bought Image Comics when I was a kid. But I just didn't, I didn't know I could do that, you know? So you're watching cartoons as a kid and you see the commercials for the Spawn toys and you're like, I don't even know what this is, but it's so epic. Like, I want that. And then, you know, you save up your money, your mom takes you to Walmart or whatever. And I remember buying that original Violator toy. And I just, I thought Violator was such a cool looking character. I've always loved monsters and creatures and stuff. I was so excited. But the other cool thing is all the original Spawn toys came with a comic book. And they were basically segments of the actual, like, proper comic book series. You know, they were kind of like, you'd get like half of one of the actual like Spawn comics. So the Violator action figure, I believe it was kind of like, I want to say it's like kind of the second half of the first Spawn issue, or it might be from issue two, where you actually have Spawn facing off against Violator for the first time. So I got that little segment of the story and the action figure. Now, this one is an honorable mention because the action figure wasn't that great. McFarlane has came such a long way. He has, you know, McFarlane as a company has the, you know, some of the best action figures in the world now. Back then, the Violator was kind of one of those more like flimsy plastic sort of figures with the wire inside, so he was like, he could be, he was one of those bendy toys, right? So his limbs could bend any direction. Still looked cool, but I think because of the flimsy nature of it, I don't think the toy lasted that long, but still, like, it meant the world to me, and it came with a comic, so I really, really loved that when it came out, so.
Right on. Yes, good call on this one. This is, I remember this toy fondly. Yes, because part half of the figure was bendy.
Yep.
Like that in the realm of like what Bendems used to
be. It was like a Gumby toy. Yeah, it was
like... yeah. And then like the wire limbs and stuff like that. Yep. So cuz it had to be, there was no other way to do it. Mm-hmm. But that was a fantastic figure. Sean, first actual pick of the night.
Nice. My number 5, cuz I rank all my lists, is
the... you don't have to.
It's more fun. The Small Soldiers, Commando Elite, and Gorgonauts.
Oh, of course, yeah.
The Christmas after that movie Small Soldiers came out, I got all of the Gorgonauts and all of the Commando Elite. It was fantastic. And they're super weird characters and whatnot, but extremely fun to play with as a kid. And I don't have a whole lot to talk about, but it was just like, it was one of those Christmas mornings that, like, you get that big gift.
Yeah.
And it was so many of them, but, like, the whole package was, like, right there. It wasn't like, I got this one Lego set, but I really want this other one that goes along with it type of a deal.
Yeah.
So, just an awesome memory from childhood.
The Gorgonite figures were cool because they had more variety. Like, some of those figures, like, there's the one that kind of looks like a rhino, as well as the one that kind of looks more like a hunchback sort of character. There's even a joke about that in the movie, but those were big figures. Like, those were beefy, heavy figures, and that was really cool. And then the Commando Elite, I remember those figures, in my opinion, were always really successful, because they're toys based off characters who are toys. So it wasn't like when you get like an old like Superman figure and you're just like, this does not look like Christopher Reeve at all or whatever. Like, these really looked like they were right out of the movie, and that was one of the other cool parts of it, you know.
Mm-hmm. All right, me, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, me. Okay, so this was definitely before your guys' time, and I know if you've Googled things, you probably would have seen this. But Marvel had a line of figures. So, like, the Star Wars figures, the classic Star Wars size was 3 3/4, right? So, for a while, you had the Star Wars figures, you had the G.I. Joe figures, and you had a handful of other figures that kind of fell real close in those lines of in terms of height
for the figures. Yeah.
Marvel and DC had two different lines. They were a little bit taller, but for the most part, they were pretty darn close. But Marvel had what they referred to as the Secret Wars line.
Probably
based on the comic run of Secret Wars. But the ones that I had that I played with the most were Captain America and Spider-Man.
Nice. Absolutely love those figures. Really only a couple points of articulation, not a lot of poses, but it was that play style aspect of it. That there was a lot of play, a lot of love given to those figures, but they were awesome. And at the end of the day, sometimes I look at toy shelves today and I go, why can't I get, right? Like, why can't I get the regular figures that I used to get? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, sometimes there's that thing where the figure has so many points of articulation, you can't even let him stand up because their ankle, they have to put the bend at the ankle and you're like, well, he's going to fall over because I can't stand him up. Yeah. Right. So
I'm sure you remember or learned in, at any time, whatever, that, the Secret Wars comic series was put together in order to have every single character action figure made by the same company so that they all matched.
Sure.
And
yeah.
That was actually the reason that whole comic series happened. And the series is amazing. But I remember looking up those action figures just to see all the different figures that were made. And the Venom action figure out of that run has the best, like, proportions. Like, the head doesn't look funky, like, the way the shoulders are and whatnot. Like, it actually looks how you imagine it, or even how you saw it in the animated series and stuff. But that's a great pick.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Peter.
Yeah, I guess I'll kind of change my order. I'll go with, since you mentioned Venom, I'll actually go with a Venom figure on my list. Venom's one of those characters where there's been so many action figures for this character, and there's so many good ones. Like, I remember our other brother Scott had this, this isn't my pick, but he had this Venom figure that was like this big, like hulking Venom, and it had, like, you know, all these different, like, it had Venom's main face, but there was all these other little, like, symbiote faces coming off his back, and I think you'd press a button on his back and the little faces would, like, pump up and down.
I actually had that here for a couple years.
Oh yeah,
as a joke. like when he'd come over.
You just stole it from him?
No, I found it at Mom and Dad's house, and I took it home. It was all after we all moved out. I took it home, and I would put it, like, on the shelf, like, when I knew they were coming over, right? Hoping he sees it. If he doesn't see it, I'd put it away, and I'd put it back on the shelf. Like, I eventually gave it to him, but it was like I had it for a couple of years.
Dang.
I think that's awesome. I think, like, Venom's just one of those characters that's... He's, like, monstrous and gruesome, but he's also simple enough that just, like, he translates so well into a toy. And so, my next pick is a Venom figure. It's from the Marvel Legends line. This figure came out in 2001. Like I said, I tried to kind of find a couple stats just in case people at home are Googling along. But, so it's the Venom figure from the Marvel Legends line. But this is a really badass figure that I bought when I was in high school, I think. And it's just a really cool figure. You have Venom standing there. He's got, like, so many points of articulation. The muscles look awesome. His face is very striking with this figure. He kind of has, like, Venom's mouth is opened so wide, almost similar to, like, if you've seen the newer, like, It movies, the way that Pennywise's, like, mouth opens at certain parts. Like, it's almost like that, like a giant, like, duck bill. And there's the fangs and the tongue, and the tongue's reaching out. But if you look closely between the, like, insides of his mouth, like, where his tongue would connect to his throat, you can actually, there's, like, little holes in it, and you can actually get, like, peaks of Eddie Brock's face inside. It's, like, such an incredibly sculptured figure. So I absolutely loved this one. And it comes with, like, a really cool display base. I actually looked it up. It's the character, Curtis Elkins' version of the Sentry is the character that he's standing on that he fought against. So that's actually a really very obscure character. I had to do some research to figure out what is this base even. But this one was just a badass toy when I bought it, and I still have it on display at home. And this is another one that came with a comic book, so I thought that was really badass. I think, like, when a figure comes with a comic book, it's one of the coolest things ever, you know. So.
Right on. Sean, this one's for you.
Good. My number four is the Red Ranger from the mid 1990s Power Rangers action figure run. And these were about that G.I. Joe Barbie size.
Your 12-inch.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And it was, I mean, you could move the ankle, you could move the knee, the hips, shoulders, elbows, the wrists, and like the first two fingers on the hand, as well as like turning the head or whatever. But so it wasn't like as intense as like McFarlane toys are like now. But Power Rangers were my jam, and you know, the coolest one on the screen was the Red Ranger, until the White Ranger and the Green Ranger came in. But I never had the Green or the White Ranger. I know Peter and I's friend growing up actually had the sword from the White Ranger that mm-hmm. made special noises and whatnot, and like a little like falcon mouth came down. But the Red Ranger was like the guy that I wanted to be until, you know, sweet Green Ranger came on the scene.
Nice. Yeah, like midway through the Mighty Morphin season when Green Ranger came about and everybody's like, screw the Red Ranger, he's yeah. all news.
Yeah, and the same thing with the White Ranger. Like, screw the yeah. white, screw the Green Ranger, and you're like, well, wait a minute, it's the same guy. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
absolutely.
But it's his final form.
It's his final form, Green Ranger. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Power Rangers had some really cool figures. They had the one figures that they would change, so you would, like, the chest would open up and the head would flip around, and so it'd go from Power Ranger to like their regular persona. But besides those, I do remember, Sean, those 12-inch Power Ranger figures. They kind of specialized in those. Like, they exceeded with that size. So mm-hmm. I totally hear you on this pick. So,
all right, me. Okay, again, old school from the 80s. Kenner had a line of DC figures. So this is specifically the Kenner Super Friends or DC Superheroes, whatever the line that was. Specifically, the characters I'm referring to are Batman and Robin. I'm a huge Batman fan. Those are my two characters I played with the most. But I had several of them. I had the Superman, I had the Flash, I had Aquaman, that kind of thing. But this was the cloth cape Batman yep. and Robin. The Batman actually got reskinned later, like repainted and re-released for the when the 89 movie came out, so they had to release the black version, you know what I mean? So, but those figures like are probably some of the best in terms of like DC figures, I in my opinion, that have ever released. But yeah, the Kenner Super Friends Batman and Robin, specifically those two.
That's the awesome. One where the Robin cape is a cloth cape, but then it has like a hard plastic, like,
it's got a hard plastic to it. It's got a hard all the capes were like that. They had hard plastic thing to clip around their neck, and then the capes were cloth.
But yeah. Didn't it have like the little like yellow like up around his face?
The Robin did, yeah.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. Those were sweet.
And I think the Green Lantern did, but I never had that because it was Alan Scott Green Lantern. But I never had that one, so.
The Wonder Twins didn't make the cut, though, for this one.
They might have, and if they did, I never had the figures.
I meant they didn't make your cut.
They did not make my cut.
Good stuff.
But I remember those because I remember, like, that was that thing where, like, I had the Batman, I had a Batman, Superman, whatever, and then you're at the grocery store, and you see the Robin sitting there on the peg by the register, and you're like, can I get the Robin? You know what I mean? Because I don't mm-hmm. have a Robin yet. Like, I remember that conversation very vividly.
Nice.
Peter, what about you?
Yeah, so I'm going to stay on the DC comic book route. There was a series of Justice League of America figures. They might have actually just been called JLA figures, but this is another one I did some research. This series came out in 1998. So we're kind of in the heart of, like, you know, the 90s superhero boom as far as, like, Marvel and DC right figures yeah, and yeah. stuff. So these are figures that I didn't really buy when they were coming out, but a couple years later, I was in high school. I was getting really back into comics and superheroes. And
like, these are the ones based on the Bruce Timm?
No, these are okay. based. These are more like comic accurate sort of
Fair
figures.
Okay.
These are the ones with the massive JLA.
Yeah, the stand. So the one that you might be familiar with, Drew, is there is like a really cool Azrael Batman, and it's kind of like with the red suit and the cool that same series. When I was in high school, though, so this is a couple years after this the series was released, I would go to the mall, and KB Toys would have these, like, giant baskets, like these pallet size, like,
back in the day,
tall.
Kids, we had stores where you could go and buy toys and actually look at yes. toys.
KB Toys was the greatest.
And now I feel like when my kid says he wants something, I just pull up my phone and go, yes. I'll be here tomorrow. Like,
KB Toys was like at the mall, it was like the best toy shop there. But they had these giant, like, pallet sized baskets filled with bargain toys. And I think because these toys were 3-4 years old, I found so many of those Justice League action figures, and they were probably selling them for like $3. So I didn't find any like Batman, or I did find one Superman. I don't remember if I got any Batmans, but I got like Impulse, Aquaman, that Azrael. I bought another Azrael because we had an old version that like broke, but I got like a bunch of the Justice League characters, Martian Manhunter, and they all looked really sick. But my favorite one was actually they had a Steel figure, like Steel from Superman. And this one's cool because, one, it's a character you don't see of figures a lot. And my Superman fandom was like through the roof at the time. I think I was reading like the Reign of the Superman at the time. So I'm like, this is freaking awesome. I got to get this Steel figure. And I bought it. But it's also the 90s kind of Steel where he's got the full-on suit that's kind of like formed to his face. He's got the big red cape. His costume doesn't really make sense from a logistical standpoint. Like, there's no way that this character would actually have that cape. But it looks so cool, and I bought it. And this is another one I still have on display on my shelf. I always love that character design, even though it doesn't make the most sense. It's just so cool. So there you go. So
what figure are we going with?
Yeah, Steel from the 1998 JLA line. So, but all of them were actually really awesome.
I'm really surprised you didn't say another one, but I don't know if it's going to be later on your list or not.
I mean, I had a Superboy one, I had a Impulse one, I'm not sure which. The Impulse one looked really cool, too.
That I thought you were building up to Impulse, because that was an extremely impressive action figure. Not that you could like really move him into many different poses, but super cool looking.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sean, you're up.
All right, so for number three... a toy company that I've only seen really like once for one thing, and as much as I don't live under a rock, I haven't seen anything like actually notable by this company, but the company is called Joyride, and they made the first run of my favorite video games action figures ever, which was Halo, and specifically the Halo Spartans. They were, I want to say, maybe 8-inch figures.
Yeah, they were... I want to say they were, like, they're definitely 8 to 10. Mm-hmm. I only say that because they weren't tall enough to be considered, like, 12 inches, right?
Right.
So, go ahead.
It was a slightly awkward height in between, like, you know, the regular collectible 6-inch Black Series that we have now and, you know, a giant G.I. Joe or Barbie. But the Halo Spartans were nearly perfect for exactly what it looked like that you were playing on screen. And the variety of weapons and color schemes that went all through it, they had almost every single color made as an actual action figure. And I remember one birthday, my oldest brother in the force gave me a couple of them, and it was like one of the most mind-blowing moments for an action figure person, because I opened the first present and it was the white Spartan. And it had maybe like the pistol, but then also the flamethrower, which you never had on the console version of the video game.
I know,
so it was
right?
Super epic.
Nice.
Then I opened the next one, and it's the Gold Elite Zealot from the original design of the game, which was amazingly looking. And then I opened the third one, and then my mind is super blown because I got the Black Spartan, which was like one of the most rare action figures ever. So super... super grateful for that gift back in the day, and it was it's still, you know, of all time, one of my absolute favorite figures I've ever had.
Excellent. Yeah, those Halo figures are really cool. Those figures fell in a little bit into the line of like points of articulation for me, where I'm like, I can't make things stand up, and like,
mm-hmm. Yep. 'Cause
those are ones I wanted to put in poses on the shelf, but you're like, God, he won't stay put, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
You had to kind of like lean him on things so it looked cool, and then you're like,
you can have him down on one knee, but you have to hold him sitting there, otherwise you're just gonna like tip over.
Yeah, they didn't. That was my one problem with those. All right, so yes, you are sitting in this is my pick, so you're sitting in a big room of, say, Black Series Star Wars figures all over the place. None of them, there is only one that has been opened, and it's not in this room. I opened one of them, and only one of them,
right.
and it was kind of like, this figure is way too cool to stay in the box, it's got to be displayed, and that is the Biker Scout with the speeder bike.
Mm-hmm.
The Biker Scout Trooper with the speeder bike. I absolutely love that figure. It's the very first Black Series figure I ever bought. But I'm like, no, I have to open this up. I have to display it on the shelf. And I love it. It looks great. It's up in my movie room. But that's the only one. I absolutely love how that looks. So
yeah, it is a sick,
it's one that has crazy, it's another, these things have crazy points of articulation. You know what I mean? And like, you, once you get them in the pose, like, you're not playing action figures, mm-mm, right? You are putting these up for display as adult collectors. That's what it is. So
it's like taking a model that's already been put together. I'm taking it out. I'm placing it here. I'm going to just sit back and have some bourbon looking at it.
I know. all right. Peter, yeah. What do you got?
So I'll go into another one from my childhood. So a couple picks ago, I was talking about how my brother Scott had this amazing Venom action figure, and it was the big one. It was bulky. It had all the different faces. And I remember growing up, like, especially like middle school, like junior high years, there was something about those big bulky figures that I loved. Like, I don't know about you guys, because you could have like these sleek, like your Batmans and Supermans and stuff, but once you got into Venom and the more like monstrous, like, you know, a big like Hulk, there's just something so badass about, like, you know, spending that like $10 or whatever and having like this figure with substance. And I remember when Scott got that Venom figure, I really wanted something like that. And so, like, from then on, I was just like on the prowl for, like, I need to get some kind of big monster figure or something. And so the one I wanted to mention is another figure I think I've mentioned on the show before a long time ago, but it's actually a Mutant Spawn. So it's another Spawn figure. This is from the Spawn Deluxe 1996 series, Series 6, I believe. But it's basically, I thought it was called Insect Spawn, actually, because if you look at the figure, it's kind of has an insect sort of look. But it's just this badass monster mutant Spawn. It is a big figure. It kind of has this weird, like, endoskeleton sort of texture. It has, like, kind of this rib cage, and inside the rib cage, there's actually, like, this sort of interior, like, organ that you kind of can kind of poke at, like, through, like, this hard plastic rib cage. There's, like, kind of this soft plastic interior organ of grossness that you can kind of feel if you want. But it was just such a cool figure. It was one of those big bulky ones, really easy to play with, and it's one of those figures that I think it only had like 4 points of articulation, but it had big old feet, big old hands. It was very easy to pose. Like, it's very hard to actually set it up without it knocking over, because it was so bottom heavy. So that was really cool too.
All right, that goes back to Sean, number two.
Yeah, number two, and I'm very surprised what Peter was building up to. I thought it was another action figure again. but not, my number two is one that was a hand-me-down. It's one of the action figures that I've played with the most in my life of playing with action figures, and it is, I want to say, the 3 to 4 inch Lone Ranger, and the mask were fixed onto the figure.
That falls into the 3 to 3/4.
Yeah. I don't know if I ever even saw the guns for it, or how long they lasted, or were in our possession, but I have I played with that so much. I even took it to church with us on Sundays, and Mom said that he could go as long as he was quiet. But that was, you couldn't move the hands. It was just the elbows, the arms, the legs and the knees, but so fun. And for the quality of the toy, it was so durable that I think it could have been like Napoleon Dynamite, like being dragged behind the school bus. And you could probably do that your entire school career, and it still would be fine. Yeah, like, those, plenty of paint chips, but
some of those old toys, man, they were just really durable.
Mm-hmm.
So,
classic.
Yeah. Good call. I know I still have one of those Lone Rangers kicking around somewhere in the realm of me having,
nice.
You know, yeah. All right. So this one, I had a real hard time picking, bouncing between my one and two, what I wanted to talk about last. But I made this in my number two. This is my one cheat, because I couldn't narrow it down. Cause yeah, you can narrow it down to the one Batman fig, right? But at the end of the day, this was one where I had to have all of them. I wanted the whole line. I wanted all the vehicles. I wanted all the play sets, all of it. And that is the Batman Animated Series
from the original run when they first started releasing those figures.
Yeah.
I know they did newer ones nowadays, present day, and they're really expensive to get your hands on, but that initial wave of Batman animated stuff, I had the Batmobile, I wanted all the characters, I had most of the characters, I still have the Man-Bat intact, I still have the Riddler intact, I still have the Bane, I still have, like, I have the Batman, that kind of thing. I actually, the one piece I wanted, which I never could get my hands on as a kid, was the Batcave, but now that I have adult money, I actually found it in a garage sale, so I have the Batcave playset, which I, you know what I mean? So I was able [S2] Nice. [S1] to get my hands on it, and it was intact, so that was really cool. But yeah, that animated series wave, that was like peak Batman for me on like all levels.
Right. Can we go play with it afterwards?
We can if you want, yeah. I can break it up.
So are you going with a specific figure or just the...
It's more of like the animated series wave.
Okay.
Mm. Yes, at the end of the day, it's Batman, mm-hmm. right? But the wave itself was just, yeah.
I like... this one's cool because I feel like that Bruce Timm artwork translated so well.
So well.
To the figure. And it's like every single one looks like it's just hopped right out of the cartoon.
Yeah, Joker was perfect. They didn't have a lot of points of articulation. You could make them stand. They would all freestand. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. It was perfect. So, yeah.
Nice.
Second to last pick. What do we got?
Yeah, so another one I've mentioned before, but I think it's been quite a long time. I actually went with another McFarlane Spawn Series figure. This is from Series 25. This is the deluxe box set of The Creech. So for anybody who's like a current comic book fan, Greg Capullo is a huge name in the comic book industry, whether it's working on Batman or the Batman-Deadpool crossover, or, you know, he used to work on Spawn. But after working on Spawn back in the 90s, he did his own like independent book that he wrote and drew, and it was called The Creech. And it's kind of this cool monster story that has weird alien conspiracy thriller elements. It's got like a weird like religious conspiracy element, but it's kind of just this cool badass monster creature called the Creech who is on the loose. And this I remember in high school was one of my favorite comics. Like, I thought the artwork was so cool. It was such a dark and edgy story. It was exactly what I wanted at the time. And I remember I want to say it was my senior year of high school, I went to Comic-Con and I saw this figure. There's this box set of this huge Creech action figure, and it's another one of those big bulky figures, and it was a really cool display, and that was like my big purchase. So I think that might have been at the time like $25. Nowadays it probably would be $75 or something like that, but at the time it was like $25. So I went to Comic-Con, I bought that and probably a handful of 50-cent comics at the time, and that was probably my big loot back then. But it's such a cool figure. I still have it on display. It looks just like it's right out of the comic, and it's like, it's just one of my favorite character designs. So this one had to make my list. So there you go.
This is what I thought your last pick was gonna
be. Oh, okay, I gotcha. Yeah.
Monolithic of a figure it was compared to other action figures that you can proportionally put next to him.
Yeah,
like he would be the right size compared to this other guy, but he's just like this hulk of a piece of plastic sitting on the table.
Yeah.
Sure.
And this is another one that I did open up, and I took it out of the box, even though I shouldn't have. It just, again, it's like the Stormtrooper thing you were talking about. It just looks so cool. I just couldn't help it. You know, I had to open
Sometimes
it
Sometimes you got to take them out.
Yeah.
Sean, final pick. What do you got?
My number one was not a... I never bought this figure, and I was never given to me, but my older brother let me play with it. And it's... It is by far my absolute favorite action figure. It is so cool, so fun. Again, another very durable, even though I know I could have broken it plenty of times, is the Jurassic Park T-Rex.
Oh,
the one where the side of its belly had a chunk that could be taken out.
That was a quality toy dinosaur.
Yeah.
Just saying.
I cannot count the amount of times that people have walked past the room and stopped while they were watching me play with action figures, and it was the most enticing thing to be entertained by.
The best part about this figure is it had like a really cool feel because it was kind of like, I think it had like an interior, like hard plastic skeleton, but it's kind of like this rubber, like it felt mm-hmm. like an actual dinosaur, like, and it was flexible and stuff, but it could also,
it was flexible enough so you like, you actually turn the head properly the way the way he would turn his head in the movie, mm-hmm. right? Or like, yeah. you know, like, God, it was,
but it was also rigid enough that you could stand it up on display. And I remember, Drew, when you first got that figure, it was kind of like painted with like a beige sheen with like kind of green stripes. But after the years, all the paint yeah. chipped off, and it was kind of this just like gray rubber piece of whatever, but it was still so cool. And I do remember Sean playing with this a lot, now that you mention it. So
yeah, good call, man. That's a phenomenal piece. All right, so this is the thing. This is like, look, I'm gonna call out the whole line and the play sets and everything, but at the end of the day, it comes down to one figure. But He-Man.
Oh,
let's okay, be real, yeah. dude. I battled this one big time. This, like, it was the, I hate to say that it was the Star Wars killer, but it was, like, Kenner, like the Star Wars toys dominated everything up until He-Man released, and all of a sudden it was a He-Man world. But yeah, dude, I probably had three or four He-Mans because, like, they broke or I lost or whatever, and I have to get a new He-Man, but, like, that was the character. And then I had all the other characters to go with them, and you have to have Battle Cat, and you have to get Castle Grayskull, and you have, like, it was quality yeah. playtime, right? Mm-hmm. But yeah, man, at the end, like, I'm calling out the whole line, but in all seriousness, He-Man, right? So,
yeah.
I have the power sword hanging on the wall right there, like, He-Man, let's be real.
He-Man had are He-Man figures, like, 5 inches? I feel like they've got a weird size.
Yeah, they got a weird size, too.
They had this cool, like, bulky size that was kind of,
And they were also, like, all the same figure. Different paint jobs. Mm-hmm. It's like they were like trying to be safe on the yeah. molding, you know what I mean? So,
but what was cool was once Ninja Turtles came out, their figures were like the same size, so He-Man and Ninja Turtles could cross over so well,
which is why you now have He-Man and the Ninja Turtles crossover figures.
Yeah, period. I mean, absolutely.
If you haven't seen them sitting on the shelves at like Target, like, you know, so
good call with He-Man. I didn't know this was going to be your final pick, but
I battled. It was going to be the Batman animated stuff, or it was going to be He-Man. I could not figure it out. I was like, and there were so many. Like, I know I only had the one honorable mention, but my short list was way longer than it should have been. So I'm like, I'm not even going to try and do any more than the one honorable mention. So
nice.
So final pick, Peter. What do you got?
Yeah. So my last one. It's kind of funny. This is the only pick, I might be wrong, but I think this is the only pick on my list that is still in the box. So as much of a bad collector, I have other action figures that are in the box, but on my list, every other one I opened except for this one, because this is one of the few figures that I have signed, actually. And this one is a cheat because it's technically not an action figure, even though it actually is, but it's because the brand is in action figures, and this is the Clerks action figure for Chronic, who is from Bluntman and Chronic. That is the character from Jay and Silent Bob. This is Jay's superhero alter ego, Chronic. I remember probably the same comic convention that I bought that Creech figure from. Now that I'm thinking about it, I did definitely buy more loot at that convention. I'm pretty sure it was the same convention. Jason Mewes was there signing autographs. And I was there with one of my high school best friends, and we were just walking around, and we're like, holy crap, Jason Mewes is here. Let's get his autograph. But we needed something for him to sign because we were just walked in blind. We didn't know he was going to be there. So I found like this figure, like, oh, they have these like in action figures. Let's buy one, get him to sign it. So yeah, this is a really cool figure, especially because it's one of my favorite movie characters, one of my favorite actors. And yeah, I got him to sign this one. So, and then since then I think I've met Jason Mewes 2 other times, and he's always been really cool every other time. So good stuff. But yeah, that's my last pick for the for this list.
So. Nice. So we're on the end of episode 400. That brings us to a close. I'll tell you about the what we're doing next in a second. What I think is interesting is I keep for the past 400 episodes, I have a giant spreadsheet of every list we've ever done. I have a list of list tab, so it's a list of every list. And then there's a tab for a full breakdown. And now that we've hit 400, I have to move over to the next tabbed sheet. It's the spreadsheet file, I think, is so big that it takes longer to open, like, every time I open it.
So how many rows down?
So how many rows down for the 400? That brings me to 454 rows.
Wow.
And that's, so what I did was,
So I broke it. So the first one, it was episode 1 to 100, and I was like, that's way too many. So then I started doing them by 50s. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so it's 351 to 400 on that tab. So I'm jumping over to the official 401 to 450 tab. Here we go.
And I'm just wondering what Ganon's up to.
I know, right?
What about the droid attack on the Wookiees?
So at any rate, next week, Peter, this is what I had an idea of this, and then we went and saw Disclosure Day, and I had a great way of explaining it. We're going to do something called Prequels Wanted. Now, every now and then you watch a movie where you hear a line of dialogue, or you have a scene, and they reference something that happened in the past or off screen or something, and you go, hold on, there's a story there, and it's a brilliance of writing. It's that thing where the writer wrote that line knowing that that line meant something to something that happened off screen, and you go, I want to see that. Mm-hmm. So that's what I was thinking.
What's the deal with these Clone Wars that Obi-Wan mentioned?
I know, the Clone Wars. But no, like, Disclosure Day is great because there's a part of us that go, yeah, you got dropped into the middle. There is a story of him stealing all that stuff and what played up to the opening of Disclosure Day, right? Mm-hmm. So we don't need a prequel. I don't actually want a prequel, but wouldn't it be cool to see that story, right? So that's ultimately what the list is. What's that story?
I love it. Yeah, this is really fun. Nothing's like coming to mind right away, but yeah, this is going to be
a couple movies right off the bat that I'm like, and Disclosure Day is a perfect example, but I had a couple right off the bat that I go, no, this would make a really cool list.
Awesome.
So, any final words for the night, gentlemen?
I am extremely surprised. Hang on, let me pull this back up.
Okay.
Well, after I said Venom and then Peter rolls right into Venom, I'm like, oh, I'm a jerk for even bringing it up beforehand.
You're fine.
I'm really surprised that even on your honorable mentions, Peter, you did not bring up Biker Mice from Mars.
I thought you were going to bring that up. I did really love Biker Mice from Mars when it came out. I just don't know if they... I mean, there's so many action figures we had. Like, and we were talking about the list. I'm like, mm-hmm. Oh, man, I had Gargoyles toys I didn't mention. I had, like, a sweet Sauron action figure. Like, Sauron, yeah, from X-Men. There's so many good characters we could have brought up. So it's just...
I debated...
Narrowing it down to five, you know, it's just hard.
I debated for myself Street Sharks or, what was it, the Cowboys from Moo Mesa type of a deal.
Oh, yeah.
But then also Andy... Drew, I,
Sorry, we'll fix it in post.
I'm also really surprised you didn't have any Voltron on your list.
I know.
Even as honorable mentions.
I know, that's the thing. Like I said, short lists, all that nonsense, so... well, hey guys, you ready to toss this episode in the can?
Yeah, let's go for it.
Awesome. Everybody, do us all a favor. Check out our website, top5report.com. There you'll find links to our social media, along with a link to our email, top5report@gmail.com. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, Amazon, Audible. You can subscribe to us in those places. If you do, you will not miss a single episode. You can also leave us a review. We love those 5 stars, but we understand criticism because it helps us get better and it makes the words we say feel important. You can follow me personally on Twitter and Instagram at Drew3927. Peter, what about you?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at NinjaPierre, and that's where I'll be spreading the word that...
Excellent. Hey, that was actually very well done. All right, everybody, for the Top 5 Report, I'm Drew.
I'm Peter.
And I'm Sean.
And we'll see you next week. Thanks for listening.